Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
All Alices of wonder wait. They wait in a room of three-way mirrors. They wait through the awkward days of limp hair and acne, and the red riding hoods across town. Wait in capes made from ill-fitting prom dresses. And you alone, wait for a night of stars and lines as swoon-inducing as Neruda's. And what do they get? For all the ha and who, but a silly rabbit or a big bad wolf and a quick flash poem of an alpha mushroom debut.
Good evening. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and welcome to the DC Poetry Project's weekly call-in show, The Power of Poetics. The piece that you heard just a second ago was Blushing in Moonlight by Deborah Russell. Each week on this show, what we try to do is to travel through the power of poetry to places that only our imaginations can build. We visit the good, bad, and indifferent of life, and through our poetic journey, we often find comfort, solace, truth, celebration in our words. So again, welcome to the Power of Poetics. It's going to be a great, fantastic hour. We have a guest with us tonight, Ms. Brenda Bunning, a poet extraordinaire, and we're going to begin this journey. Brenda, are you with us?
Yes, I am. How are you tonight?
Hello. Hello, Brenda. It's good to hear your voice. That's fantastic. Again, this is the Power of Poetics, and we're so pleased to have you with us tonight.
Yeah, I'm pleased to be here, Michael. Thank you so much.
What I'd like to do is to begin with a brief biographical sketch of you. I know you personally. I know you're fantastic, and we're going to share that with the public. All right?
All right. Sounds good.
All right, then. Brenda Bunting is a socially conscious poet, spoken word artist, and educator currently residing in the great city of Silver Spring, Maryland. Ms. Bunting inspires audiences with thought-provoking original works and celebratory tributes that are designed to leave a lasting imprint in the consciousness of the audience. She's an alumna of the University of Kentucky, and she's been reciting and performing poetry for 20 years. She's been published in newspapers, anthologies, and journals, and she also facilitates sessions where she advocates for the therapeutic benefits of writing poetry, and we all know how important that is. Her book, Poems of Love and Violence and Between Life and Death, is available on Amazon.com, and tonight Brenda's with us to read from her book, Poems of Love and Violence in Between Life and Death. I am so very, very, very excited to have you here. And Brenda, I'll let you take over from there.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. I am so delighted to be reading my poems to you all tonight. And this book, Poems of Love and Violence in Between Life and Death, it's really just been a labor of love. Some of these poems are like old familiar friends to me, and some of them are newer. The book just was something that was in my heart to write. I had the title way before I had the poems. But what I want to do is just read a couple of poems from each section, and then after that just maybe have general discussion. As you talked about, and I talk about often, about poetry is it can inspire people to think about things in a different kind of way. It gives life and emotion to so many things that we might be feeling. So this poem that I'm getting ready to read right here is on page 12 of my book, and it's called This Old Pair. I love you, Grandma and Grandpa, still. In an antique photo album appeared Mr. Samuel and Mrs. Annie Black, a railway porter for the Southern Pacific, a domestic who washed and ironed clothes, but in the frayed black and white, they posed in Sunday's best. The look of life in their eyes was edged and resolute fortitude, the respectability of daily purpose, was enduring the struggle of real trials of fire with stoic integrity. The treasured introspective reveals a minimal fuss and few words passed between them, but they held one another's hand tightly in the fashion of love. Sharing graced their union particular, as wondering children became friends. The hopeful time of second romance came certain like the seasons for the widower and his intended. Peripheral happiness frames the photo. Their beautiful expressions stand to indulge the pleasure of the picture taker. The devoted couple moved onward, away from the still shot, frozen in time.
Let me share before you continue that the theme for this month's programming is life, love, and the pursuit of happiness through poetry. So Brenda's work fits into that category perfectly. And I didn't want to stop you, but I just needed to say that so people understand what this is all about, Brenda. So please continue.
Oh, sure. No problem at all. This next poem is called Entering Into May. And this poem took me about 2 years to write. I've edited and changed it and changed it and changed it, but this is Entering Into May. May I love again, may I. May I tell you how I feel, may I. On May 3rd, you called my home casual, while I felt intense. I wanted to hold you, to say something big like I miss you with a small voice. Defenseless, I was thrust out, and I resembled nothing casual. I drew close to you in moth to flame-like fashion, but your heat did not burn, your hands did not crush. Wondering vulnerably, with no wings to carry me, unprepared and premature, you cocooned me in tenderness, pledged unspoken vows to protect our fledgling love. March I must, march right back to the day, to the third month I cowardly came, to you bold in matador fashion, flashing my badge of yellow, refusing to look at broken pieces, expecting you to pick them up. You gathered them slowly, examining each one gently, while I pretended disinterest. A drunken stupor of superficial, I lashed out in fear, fear of your possibility. Your honest love encircling brought me wholly back. I watched you so patient as you bandaged my sorrows, ashamed of my baggage, waiting, wanting, to unfold into butterfly expression. I thought moth I am only, bound for the darkness, but the light of your love moved me past the pain. Looking deep into your eyes, I feel giddy when you smile. I cannot even pretend mystery. Wings of beautiful spread to soar in hope and passion. I am now red and glowing, the color of passion and life. My season of love is renewed, like the spring season revival. We drink and dance in this blossoming. You are so wonderful to me. I feel myself living. My heart is beating strong, and I feel like a love song. I feel like a love song.
You know, having read your book, I think that's one of my personal favorites. Feeling like a love song, that is just such a powerful, powerful line. Such a powerful line. Talk a little bit as we continue. Your inspiration, your thoughts about that particular piece, said what that piece meant to you personally.
Well, I know everyone has, you know, had times where they were in a relationship and things didn't work out. And so you kind of go through a period where you just, you know, think, well, I'm just better off not having to deal with the pain of exploring a new relationship because, you know, what you put into it, I mean, that could be that much more devastating if things don't work out. And so, you know, I think, you know, I just think about the seasons of, you know, like May, the month of May, of course, is, you know, like around spring, the beginning, coming into summer and things like that, where things are blooming and blossoming. And so I was just thinking, you know, kind of like about that season and also about, you know, having a certain amount of courage to, you know, to get into a new relationship. And when you do that, you have to bring yourself, you know. You can't, I mean, I firmly believe, you know, that, you know, you should love wholly and not pull back, even though we have a tendency to do that. So, you know, this particular poem was just kind of about someone who seemed to recognize the vulnerability and the way that our relationship was handled was with a great amount of respect and gentleness. And, you know, with that nurturing comes strength. So that's where some of the inspiration, you know, for the poem came.
Okay. What I'd like to do, to be quite honest, you've got some callers on the line, and I'd like to give them an opportunity to share at this point, to be quite honest, because what you stated was beautiful and it was really profound. So I'd like to give some of the people who are listening an opportunity to share as well. Is that okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
Who'd like to?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Brenda.
Caller.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I have your book, and I read the whole thing, and that entering into May was one of my favorites as well, because it kind of reminded me of going through all the different of phases of love and forgiveness and even daring to love again and opening up, you know. And I like the part where you have, when you start off, say, may I love again, and then you come down and say, march I? I must march right back into the day, the third month I currently came. I was like, wow, I just love that piece, the way you pull it together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm glad.
And then also, too, when you had the drunken stupor of superficial, I was like, wow, that was really, you know, strong right there. I was like,
I'm here. Yeah, thank you. I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, because also when you think of the part where they say, may I must, and you like, think of the third month, and then it kind of reminds you how may, you know, how you come in as a, how they say, may come in as a lion and leave as a lamb, you know?
Yeah, March, yeah.
That's March.
Yeah, for the month of March. And
right,
I thought about
right.
it, and that's what it kind of sounds, and it is kind of took me, like, you know, through the seasons, and you almost could feel that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cowardly came. You know, I was like, wow. So I really love that.
We have another caller. We have another caller. The area code is 760. Would that person like to share? Hello?
Can you hear me? Hi, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi, this is Lisa Marie. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I just wondered, you know, I love the way you write and the thoughts that come across in your poems. And my question was, you know, in writing, I know you mentioned one of them, it took 2 years. I mean, usually how long when something just comes to you, do you just begin writing and keep working on it, or have you had ones that you just wrote in a few minutes? Usually how does that process work?
Well, usually I have the initial poem, and this is going to sound kind of funny, but, like, I wrote this poem, and there might have been 3 lines about it that I didn't like. And it's just like an artist's brushstroke. It's like, it's not right. It was just like, you know, so that really was the whole 2 year thing. And, yeah, I can't even really, you know, when I look at this poem, I can't even remember what it was, but it was just, enough of something to say, you know, this is not, it's not done for me. So usually with my poems, I write them down and I write the whole poem, like, in a matter of, you know, maybe 5 minutes to 30 minutes. And when I go back and read it, there's a feeling that it's done. That's about the best way, that it's just kind of like, you know, when an artist paints a picture, you know, we might look at it and say, it looks done to me. But there's just this one little something missing. And that's usually the thing that makes the poem unfinished, is it'll be a couple of phrases or the order of, you know, the way something has been written, you know, different things like that. So, that usually is the one thing that takes the longest. It's something small, but because to me poetry is such a precise language, it's such a precise, literary art, you have to have every single word just right. So that's
just kinda...
Well,
I mean, what are we going to do? I want you to stop right there. We're going to take a short break and come back because, again, it being a precise language, I'm sure there are people who would argue with that thought, that it's a precise language, that it should be potentially more free-flowing and malleable in a sense. But let's take a little short break, and we'll be right back. All right, we're here with Brenda Bunting. That was a very short break, but we are back. That was the world's shortest break. We don't play around on the power of poetics. We,
I see.
We go straight to the point. All right. We're here with author, famed author and poet Brenda Bunting, and we were just talking about whether poetry should be precise or not. What are some other thoughts? I know, Anastasia, you were quite enthused about particular lines in that particular piece of poetry. Did you feel that, if for you personally, that it was precise? You know what I'm saying? Or was it more malleable and moving in your mind? Maybe I'm confused about the concept myself. Any thoughts, Anastasia?
Yes, when I read her whole book, I did feel like every word is so precise and that she was really, because I'm as a poet and I was pulling my book together, I was like, wow, every word has meaning and is precise. Like she carefully thought out every single word. So that's how I felt when I read the whole book. And sometimes I'm looking at mine, so I'm like, I don't know if mine's just so precise. So I can see why she says that, and I kind of understand because her whole book reads like that.
Okay. Well, talk a little bit more about the precision. Maybe I'm on another planet right now, but I guess when I think about poetry and I think about Walt Whitman, he was constantly revising. So is that different than being precise?
Well, Michael, that's kind of what I mean. You know, when you talk about Walt Whitman and him constantly revising, I just feel like that. For instance, someone was talking about the statement, "a drunken stupor of superficial." I feel like one word added in there would change the whole meaning of that phrase. So, you know, it's like there are. It's important to me as a poet to be able to say exactly what I want to convey very, very precisely. Without a lot of clutter around it. So I think it's more of, for me, it's a minimalist language. You know, it's not going to be a lot of words, but it's going to be an impactful statement.
Well, it reminds me of our commercial breaks, which are minimalist. They don't last long. You know, so I'm totally with you now. I'm totally with you. So every word is thought out, you know, as perfectly as a word could be thought out. And there's no clutter. I like that. I'd like to welcome Lisa Marie to the poets to our show tonight, The Power of Poetics. So welcome, Lisa Marie. And Brenda, will you continue?
Absolutely. So great. I'm going to move right now to the section of violence. And this is page 30. This particular poem is called Subjection. These poems really, I wanted to open a dialogue and start a dialogue on the subject of sexual abuse. It is a rampant and damaging aspect of the global society. I mean, there's no corner of the globe where sexual abuse has not reached out and touched its dirty hands, so to speak, on the soil of a place. And part of what my interest in is, as far as you know, using and the very valuable seeing poetry as being therapeutic, is opening up a dialogue and a space whenever you deal with any kind of sexual abuse. One of the very first things person who has been subjected to that is they want to feel safe. You know, it's very hard. It's hard enough to open up to talk about something like that, but then to be in a space where you don't feel safe, it's almost impossible to convey and get out what it is that you want to say. So a lot of these poems are dealing with the subject of sexual abuse and abuse against women and different things like that. So this poem, Subjection, is kind of just that, a reach out to victims, and I hope at some point in time I have actually put together a poetry workshop called Reclaim the Broken Pieces, and I hope to be able to use that workshop and parts of the violence section in this book to reach out to victims, to have a poetry workshop, and also just introduce them to how therapeutic poetry can be. So this is subjection. Do you have emotional scars suffocating your heart like black tar, seared in your mind like hot fire, whispering there is no agony, you liar? You want to pretend it never happened, prancing about in make-believe fashion. Physical wounds must be the only legitimate ones. If you are mentally damaged, society pokes fun. Has someone stronger ever grabbed your hand, telling you what they would do and that they can, forcing and laughing, enjoying your pain, the destructive power of self-imposed shame? You want to fade away into the shadow of self, forever forgetting the horror and humiliation felt, in a beautiful space where no one can touch or see, wrapped in comfort and security, such peace is lovely. But then the crashing, cruel reality comes, where trapped in corner, there is nowhere to run, being brutalized and subjected over and over again, until death is the only one you think it will end. Yet you will wake and live to see tomorrow, tormented, rehearsing and replaying the sorrow, until a freak or villainous partygoer you become, out all night wasted, drinking shots of rum. Or you morph into a calculating female shark who hurts men's hearts without thought. Whatever you do, it is desperate and extreme. A wounded heart makes the hand mean. You want to pretend it never happened, being the object of deranged passion. Unsealing and opening up leaves you cold, certain the despair will swallow you whole. So on you push, mortally injured inside, faking normality with hellos and goodbyes. Smiling lips are juxtaposed to stoic eyes. Only fellow sufferers see your silent cry. Days of weeks turn into months of years. The abuse is over, but you still shed tears. You should be past it now, are words you fear. You want reparation, straight and clear. Do you have emotional scars suffocating your heart like black tar, seared in your mind like hot fire, whispering there is no agony, you liar?
Thank you for sharing that. You read that so well.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, and I read this before, but when you reading it, it just really came to life for me.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I that line, actually that phrase, the first stanza of the poem, that came in my mind. And when it did, that I just wrote the rest of the poem from that point.
Wow. And then the part you said if you are mentally damaged, society pokes fun. And it's like, wow, that is so true. You know, physically wounds are legitimate ones. But when people are mentally, you know, going through something, people think, you know, like you said, in other words, you said you should get past this by now, you know, after years. And so many people are faking the normalcies of hellos and goodbyes. Oh, that was really good. I have a big tears in my eye.
Yeah, that was extremely powerful. I mean, actually, I'm stunned. I really don't know what to say. I was attempting to find a companion piece to go along with that, but that stands alone. It doesn't need a companion piece. What do we do? How do we help? how do we help when there are these silent voices that are potentially screaming out, but there's no sound?
Well, one thing I think, you know, it's such an uncomfortable subject. And what we as a society, as we as a people, what we do is we constantly seek to move to things that are comfortable, to move to things that are easy, to things that make us feel good. And I think just taking the initial step to say, you know what, I am actually going to deny myself, you know, feeling comfortable and deny myself a moment of feeling okay about everything and look around and see, you know, what is really going on right in my own neighborhood. Like I said, it's just it's so prevalent. And I think a lot of times the first thing that we want to do is we want to deny what's right in front of our face. You know, we'll want to pretend like, you know, that's not happening and that that's not going on. And it is happening and it is going on. And so I think, that's a first step is a willingness to not ignore what is right in front of you. And we do those sort of things, you know, we just do. And people will have, different feelings about this, but I don't know if you saw the newspaper after the Super Bowl, they showed a picture of Bill Belichick kissing his grown daughter. Did anybody see that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the picture, people were talking about, well, it's a cultural thing, it's this, it's that. The gut feeling that hit me was inappropriate. It wasn't, you know, it just, and I, you know, I didn't know what the article was about. I just saw kissing his daughter because I didn't look like his, I didn't realize, if I didn't see that, I would have never known that he was kissing his daughter. I would have thought he was kissing, you know, his wife or a lady friend or something. So I'm not going to pretend what that gut reaction is. That's an example of what I'm talking about. I'm not going to pretend like, oh, well, you know, people, you know, different people have upbringings. Okay, fine. But my reaction to that was, my gut reaction to that was, there's something wrong with that. That was inappropriate. And that's where I'm going to stay. And 10 people can come up at me with it and say, oh, you're overreacting. 20 people can come up to me and say, oh, you know, you've got stuff, that's why you're reacting like that. I don't care. That's still my stance. So that's kind of what I'm talking about, you know, just the courage to take a stand and say, something's wrong with this. This doesn't look right. You know, sometimes we think that, oh, my goodness, you know, I've got to go to college and major in this and become a social worker. But
yes,
we don't necessarily have to do all that. Just don't ignore what's right in front of your face and what your gut tells you, what your heart tells you. Mm-hmm.
In your workshops, do you discuss or address or work with the perpetrators as well, or it's primarily the survivors?
It's for the survivors primarily, and completely for them only. It is a space where they feel comfortable with the help, because unfortunately many times survivors become perpetrators.
Yes, very much so. I agree.
And so, you know, that is hopefully a cycle breaker. You know, that's the thing that you want to do. You know, you have children who are abused and they grow up and become abusers. And there's a lot of self-hatred that goes along with that because they think, wow, I thought I would have never, you know, I'm the one who said I'll never do this. And then they turn around and become the one who does do that. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I'd like to do is to work with you and the DC Poetry Project to assist you in terms of developing your workshops and putting them on. So that's my, I was going to say gift. It's not a gift. It's, that's what we'll do, is to offer those workshops. And because it is extremely, extremely important to stay in the forefront of vanguard of change in terms of this particular topic. So thank you so much for sharing that piece. We've got two other callers who signed on, and I'd like to bring them on, if that's okay. All right. All right. We have area code 860. Please share your name with us.
Hello, Michael. Like. This is Valerie Beers.
Hello. Hello, Valerie, all the way from
hello.
Maine.
Hello.
Hello,
what did
hello.
You say? Hello,
you're
hello.
All the way from Maine.
Yes, I am.
Yes,
it's
and then
snow
we have
tomorrow.
Area code. Oh, hey. Then we have area code 858. Hello, area code 858. Well, maybe 858 will join us later. All right.
Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Well, back to you, Brenda. As you continue your journey through poetry, we're here with Brenda Bunting, and she's sharing from her book, Poems of Love and Violence in Between Life and Death. The book is available on Amazon.com. And if you'd like to call in and ask questions of Brenda, the telephone number is 646-716-8754. Again, this is The Power of Poetics, and my name is Michael Ingram. And Brenda, you're on.
All right. Well, this next poem, like I said, you know, we're dealing with the violence section right now. And so this poem, you know, there is a whole lot about what went on with the young boys and Catholic Church. But it wasn't just the Catholic Church. I just think that there are so many men who are abused and who will never, I mean, they will go to their grave, never admitting to the fact that they have been abused as, you know, young boys or even men or whatever. Just thinking about that, I wrote this poem. It's called The Church of God and Man. Into the Stygian darkness of covering night, injustice forces this poet to fervently write, protesting and posting the lies history has dealt about the pain and horror little boys have felt. Some are eaten alive by the silent shame, spirits broken and minds never right again. No protection for the innocent child. The rape of silence spans eternal miles. Where have all the little boys gone? They cry within an unholy song. Adults look for them far and wide. In fear and dread, they quietly abide. When men who robe as gods seek them with lusting eyes, blind parents turn them over, unknowing heart and soul will die. Who is the whore sitting on the scarlet-covered beast? Souls of mankind, she is devils mask themselves in religious robes, making merchandise of all they catch hold, unleashing the floodgates of ruthless desire, their perverted ways making them to aspire, to be called father, as sinners confess, hiding in whispers their own criminal mess. Where have all the little boys gone? In hearts of men they hide wronged. Let them find justice one by one. Wounded sons in front of God come. As earth and heaven's creatures gather in wrathful accord to mete out hell and punishment, reaching right through church doors.
Wow.
To meet our hell. Yes. To meet our hell. That last line again, please.
To meet out hell and punishment, reaching right through church doors. as earth and heaven's creature gather in wrathful accord to mete out hell and punishment, reaching right through church doors.
Well, I think what I'd like to do is to recite a companion piece because it's on my spirit, and I need to just say it, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Right. Because I think people live a life in less than a lifetime, and it takes them less than a lifetime to live. So that's the title of this piece, To Live a Life in Less Than a Lifetime, because it takes less than a lifetime to live. To live a life in less than a lifetime takes less than a lifetime to live. I should know. You see, I became a man long before it was the master's plan. As a child, I was up and down, inside and out, round and about. Sometimes wanted to throw my head back and shout and say, "Stop the world, Lord, and let me be." Why can't I, like other children, age naturally, yet my childhood was snatched? And what seemed to be the blink of an eye, or was it due to that psychological bruise that still lingers on my thigh? I can't remember. Did it occur in late May or early December? All I know is that my childhood is gone, and I wanted God to tell me what went wrong, because I lived a life in less than a lifetime, and it took me less than a lifetime to live. What about you? I heard that you too had lived a life in less than a lifetime, and that it took you less than a lifetime to live. Rumor has it that you wanted to stay a child, that you wanted to rest there for a while. Yet I know that you too have been inside and out, round and about. Sometimes I've watched you, and it looked like you wanted to throw your head back and shout and say, "Please stop the world, Lord. Why didn't you just let me be? Why didn't you allow me, like other children, to age peacefully, yet like me, your childhood was snatched at what seemed to be the drop of a hat? Or maybe it was due to that emotional scar that still festers in the middle of your back. You still don't remember. Did it occur in late May or early December? All you know is that your childhood is gone, and you wanted God to tell you what went wrong. Because you lived a life in less than a lifetime, it took you less than a lifetime to live. It took you less than a lifetime to live."
Beautiful. Beautiful. That is,
well,
that's beautiful.
I just kind of felt like it fit in terms of these young people going through so much and not being able to say anything about it or comfortable saying anything about it. I mean, just to live a life in less than a lifetime takes less than a lifetime to live. Let's take another short break, and we'll be right back with Brenda Bunting, guest poet and author. We are back. Brenda, you're on.
So I am going to move here to the life section. And this is one of my own personal favorite poems in the book. It's called Her Harvest. And I know this lady. I tell you, I know this lady. I see her. I see her everywhere. And I just... everywhere I look, I see the burden and the struggle of grandparents and of old people and of people who are who wonders what happened to it all. You know, what happened to them and how did they get to where they were? And they're just trudging along. So this is called Her Harvest. I saw her myself everywhere. Flat-footed and awkwardly struggling, in overweight, in overburdened, she wore a face of yesterday's tears. In arms, she She carries tomorrow's fears. Her grandchildren danced around in an unpleasant, bullying fashion. But nothing was on her mind more than getting to the grocery store. Farm field days filled her thoughts. She treasured silent lessons taught. Mother had fresh fruits, vegetables, greens, would work outside and keep house clean. Three times daily, a huge, hungry brood would come in promptly for the daily stew. How she hated the simple country life and could not wait to move away. She thought the city had so much to offer with sophistication and pleasurable play. But no one spoke about the litter or dirt or how the smell could change your taste. The seething underbelly of poverty hurt. It is rampant in every state. A naive young girl with untested dreams, no sure-footed steps or solid plan, soon fell under its unyielding hand. And beside all this, a scheming man left her full with his spreading seed. Before she clearly shook her head, she had to provide her baby's bread. The farm was gone, just like clean air, with noise pollution everywhere. The mean and hopeless simply stare from desolation and lack of care. But nothing was on her mind more than getting to the grocery store. She boarded the bus with a shopping cart with no one offering help or assistance. While her grandchildren rudely talked, no clue of her patience or persistence, for just an apple or some greens. To cook fresh food, her heart did scream. No more shopping at the corner store, the stomping ground for pimps and whores, expired food and dusty shelves, moldy bread from heat did swell. A sorry selection, so overpriced, salty, sugary, and poisonous delight. Where you going? Her neighbors yell. Where we going? Her grandchildren cry. Not to the place, but close to the place where I remember precious fields of golden grain and harvest crop, delicious ambrosia and heavenly yield. I taste them ever in my mind to share with you, I hope, in time.
How long did it take you to write that piece?
Not long at all. Maybe a couple of days, maybe about 2 or 3 days.
I guess I was thinking that it potentially took a lifetime because that's so many people's story.
Yeah.
The harvest, you know, growing up, seeing those things, hearing that voice rings in my mind. Are there statements from some of our other guests?
I thought it was a great poem.
Tell
I love
why.
The rhyme scheme, Brenda.
Thank you.
And, you know, that was very... What's the word? Picturesque. I see that woman in the grocery store all the time.
Yes.
That poor
right.
woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, it's, you know, don't ignore, what did you say? Don't ignore the things around you. You know, so you or I would, you know, help her if she needed help. I hope
yeah.
other people would, too.
But it's so easy to ignore the things around us. And
yes, it is.
I'm not sure if that's because we don't want to see it, we shouldn't see it. I don't know. I mean, from a philosophical perspective, I'm not sure. Does anybody
There's
have an answer?
There's a fear there, Michael. There's a fear.
Talk about
There's
that.
There's a fear. Oh, I'm sorry.
A fear of
There's
what?
There's a fear there.
A fear of what? A fear of
we're
what?
We're afraid that, you know, that might be us. Or we might know somebody like that, you know? Nobody wants to become, you know, like like her, like that woman. It's like, oh, no. But, you know, she didn't choose that. I'm sure she didn't.
I think that's a very good point too about when you talk about fear, because there is we are constantly dealing with the courage to live the way we are, and there's a conformity, and there's a balance between conforming. And then saying, you know, this is who I am. You know, this is who I am. I mean, a lot of times we'll attribute that to teenagers and be like, oh, wow, you know, they're trying to figure out who they are in life. And we'll kind of laugh at that. But I think to a certain degree, we go through that our whole life, you know, is trying to find that balance between this is who I am and this is what I'm conforming to. And I just think there's just an unspoken pressure to conform.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
when
you
don't, there's a fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anastasia, were you planning to say something?
Oh, I was looking at it where I see her, I guess it's anybody or anyone, where, you know, when you had the farm life, you know, of fresh fruits and vegetables and things, you didn't really appreciate it. And then you come, when they start tearing down all the farms and building up buildings, and then now you have to, you know, take the local bus and to even try to get some groceries, and then you get there, they overprice and they canned goods and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, you know, because it's so hard right now. I live in Northern Virginia just to find, you know, fresh food, or now you got to get it organic. So I kind of really appreciate it, and it seemed like I know that woman too. And also with because we did the shopping cart. I live in New Jersey, so we had the shopping cart, and we had to put it on the bus and everything. And you know, people used to help and move, you know, but they don't help anymore. So I had really connected with a lot of pieces in this home. I kind of feel her too, like I know this woman.
Right.
Yeah, we all do.
We all know her.
Mm-hmm.
Continue, Brenda. If you've got another piece
sure.
you'd like to share, please. Let me say one
Absolutely.
Thing. We're here with author Brenda Brunting, and the number is 646. What is the number? 646. Hold on 1 second. 646-716-8754. We're the Power of Poetics, and we are on fire tonight. So we're here with Brenda Brunting. So, Brenda, please continue.
Okay, so I wrote this poem, and I've never read it, so this is the first time I'm reading it. I'll talk about it after I read it. It's called Movements of Life. Live. Inhale, exhale, breathe, wake, feel, move, experience, suffer. Cry, hear, see, blink, hunger, suck, taste, swallow, feed, burp, vomit, fear, spasm, eliminate, smell, sleep, bathe, groom, care, clean, brush, comb, dress, disrobe, choke, cough, gas, shiver, sneeze, hurt, tire, rest, sweat, twitch, lick, drink, chew, eat, smile, laugh, sit, touch, lay, wait, itch, scratch, want, think, discover, try, succeed, fail, sigh, frown, rage, recognize, ail, heal, hold, injure, hit, stop, start, listen, wonder, watch, mimic, explore, play, learn, air, understand, wave, rock, ride, crawl, trip, stumble, fall, walk, love, hug, kiss, speak,
obey, ignore, accept, ask, enjoy, climb, slide, jump, run, skip, push, pull, sing, share, dance, catch, throw, carry, lift, drop, draw, write, befriend, follow, lead, give, take, plan, make, do, work, fix, solve, create, destroy, blush, doubt, complain, hate, endure, despair, fight, judge, help, preserve, inspire, promise, pledge, worship, witness, preach, choose, calculate, admonish, discipline, bluff, embarrass, pity, apologize, date, marry, please, bear, act, nurture, sustain, plant, harvest, cook, sow, mop, dust, sweep, shovel, transgress, overindulge, envy, belittle, feign, reject, grieve, wane, buy, dry, experiment, compromise, appreciate, like, revel, contribute, travel, order, contemplate, teach, know, retire, ready, die.
Wow.
That is extremely powerful. That's a person's entire lived experience.
Wow.
Summed up in a poem. Their whole way of being from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask if before we run out of time, I knew she was going to try to read this one again. The one called Between the Light and Dark. That's
sure.
One of my favorites. That's one of my favorites.
I like this one too.
Yeah, we've got about 3 more minutes. Brenda, would you read that particular piece?
I sure will. Yes.
Thank you.
Between the light and dark. Between the light and dark, I must pen these words of faith and trust. My heart and mind will hear and see from dusk to dawn and all in between. I move in him with hope and wonder, not dare suppress my spirit under the baser show of mankind's state from gossip, news, and world debate. I watch society, great and small, the rich, the poor go through it all, the well, the sick, in love and hate, the greed and folly, none do escape. I close my eyes to rest and sleep, in shadows death close to the deep, but wake alive, alert next day, to see once more, what will it say? I breathe sweet air and feel the breeze, the sounding joy on humble knee, the leaves they rustle with the wind, I pace my step in time with them. On mountains high beside tall trees, I drink the life my eyes did see, so slowly etch it in my soul, to think back on as I grow old. My years are numbered in this place, from one who gives the gift of grace. He gave me space to dwell on earth, in day and night, and pain and mirth.
Ooh, wonderful, wonderful.
I can see why that's your favorite.
I mean, I think you are an incredible artist.
Well, thank you so much.
You are an incredible artist, and I'm so glad that we had an opportunity to hear your work and to hear a piece that you've never shared before aloud. And I'm just elated that, one, that you're a member of the D.C. Poetry Project, and two, that you are an activist and that you do serve the needs of those who need to be served.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, everyone who has called. I mean, I don't know about you, but the hour went really fast for me. I don't know if it was because I was reading or, but it was just, it was a delightful time just to be able to
it
share.
It was because it was good. It was because it was good. Everyone, please go out and purchase Brenda's book, Poems of Love and Violence Between Life and Death. It can be purchased on Amazon.com. We want to thank poet, author, wonderful person, Ms. Brenda Bunting, for being here. I'd like to also thank those people who tuned in and those who shared tonight. What I'd like to do is to share one piece as we close. Monday, February 1st, would have been legendary poet and social activist author Langston Hughes' 111th birthday.
Wow.
It would not be complete if we did not at least share one of his works as someone who spurred us all on by having the courage to stand up and speak his truth, and to speak his truth in a language that the layman, the academician, could understand. So this is one of my personal favorites, and it's called Mother to Son. Here you go. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I've been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set down on those steps because you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now. For I still going, honey, I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair. So to all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with the Power of Poetics, the DC
Michael,
Poetry Project.
Michael, is there anywhere on archives? Any archives?
Yes, there's an archive. This particular episode will be available in about an hour.
Yay!
As Blog Talk Radio, as Blog Talk Radio processes it, it will be available in about an hour. And again, I want to say thank you to everyone and Brenda.
Thank you.
You're incredible.
Thank you, Brenda.
Right.
Thank you.
In the DC Poetry Project, we let poetry ring. And I am going to end on this note with this music. Take care, everybody. Let poetry ring.
Good night.
Thank you, Michael.